is officially open.
With the 26th pick.
I like this pick.
You want to talk about a ton of talent.
The kid runs 4.50.
He looked twitchy, quick.
His short shuttle's not fast enough.
He's a top 10 pick.
They are mentally tougher than 10 times most people I know.
Welcome to Draft Peers.
Welcome to Draft Peers. Thanks for listening. Dave Asu, Jared Stanger here. So we're going to start on the offensive line, on the interior offensive line. But Jared, before we jump into centers and guards in this draft, I would like to know what your year, because I know you plan your board a year in advance or maybe even a year and a half in advance, and kind of tell us, and really for me, how you start maybe from the beginning. Like, is the draft of April 2017, let's say that's day one, the draft is over, mm-hmm. and everyone's just, you know, looking at who they got for their teams, and they're excited, they're happy, or maybe they're upset that their team didn't get the guy they wanted.
Right.
And then I know you're already plotting for the next year. So
yeah.
Go through a calendar year of you know,
well, cause,
of what you would do.
Because, of course, you're watching tape throughout the year, and you're seeing juniors play alongside of seniors.
Right.
You're seeing the sophomores playing alongside the juniors.
So guys that are flashing.
Yeah, you know some guys that are flashing early. So you've already got that sort of in the back of your mind, and that's kind of the jump-off point, is these guys that you saw, you know, Brian O'Neill, right tackle from Pittsburgh. If you're sitting there watching Dorian Johnson and Adam Bisnawati, you happen to notice the right tackle. So that's a guy that I already have in the back of my mind going
forward.
So do
you put him in an Excel spreadsheet or on notes or just in your mind?
It's just mental notes.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't actually start writing stuff down till probably July, August. And then I'll start doing that more formally.
Just on pieces of paper, you have a little notebook, or do you use a spreadsheet, or what do you do?
I make notes in my phone mostly.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll have running lists of players and thoughts and stuff like that in my phone throughout the year.
Okay, and it's like their height, weight.
Don't even necessarily worry about that stuff.
Okay.
It's just sort of general tape impressions, things, you know, the guys that I think that I'm seeing interesting promise from early on.
Okay.
Yeah, and that for me honestly starts as early as May, like a week after the draft. I'll start going through some of the names that I have in mind and look at some of their tape again.
And you do all offense, all defense. You do both sides of the ball.
Yeah. I mean, okay. I just sort of, it's free form. It just goes wherever, you know, somebody will say something that sparks my thought process, and I'll say, oh, let me go spend a weekend looking at, you know, guards. Let me spend a weekend looking at running backs, whatever.
So when the college football season begins, does anything shift in your process?
Not really. I mean, you're going to be getting more information. You know, I'm going to be able to be watching games live. So, of course, that's going to be pretty key, is that I want to be able to be watching guys that I think that are going to start to pop.
So let's say it's a matchup. Clemson plays.
Matchups are good.
Georgia, or maybe they play, you know, Virginia Tech or something.
Right.
So you might have three guys on one side of the ball, or six guys on one team, five guys on another team, and write little notes and out of the corner of your eye, you're going to be watching.
Yeah, and if you follow me on Twitter, you can sort of get a sense of that, because I'm going to be tweeting about, like, hey, this is what I'm going to be watching today. These are the three, four guys from each side that I'm looking at, and let's go from there.
And they don't have to be draft eligible for the next year. They could be draft eligible for
right.
that year or possibly the next
right.
year. And also, you don't know if they're going
to
declare or not.
I don't hold myself to the standards that pro scouts do, and that is that they can only look at seniors until they have – declared. I don't care. Like, I know a lot of these juniors are going to declare, so I'm just going to watch him now. Yeah, so I don't care about that part.
Yeah. And what if he's a freshman, but he's jumping off just to take a mental note that this guy
I mean, you'll
coming.
Have those mental notes sometimes. You know, the D tackle from Houston last year, you can't not watch Houston play and say, this guy is a force. So, you know, those players definitely happen, but it's, you know, you compartmentalize that because, you know, like, okay, 3 years down the road.
Now, when the bowl season starts, or as the season winds down, and they, you know, they put a lot of tape on, maybe they put 12, 13 games of tape. Even if they were injured, maybe they put out 6 or 8 games of tape. And not that you're going to watch every single game. So, but as the bowl season comes out, again, is there any shift, or is it kind of the same process that you've been going through?
No, it's pretty much the same process throughout the year, and it's different for different days, honestly. Like, sometimes I'm very into position groups. Some days I'm just on draft breakdown, just going through like front to back, whatever their newest tapes are. I'm just going to watch everything.
No position group, just any position.
Just like watch everything to cover my bases. Right. Guys that I've never heard of, watch those too. Like just watch everything. So it depends on the week sort of what process I'm going to be, you know, using. But I try to cover pretty much everybody. You know, I've got Draft Breakdown's pretty good about getting tape out throughout the summer, so you'll have guys that are coming up, so you can watch their 2015 tape this year. Next year it'll be 2016. So I've got a good idea in preseason of a couple games each of some of the big names that I'm trying to follow for the year. And then throughout the year they're adding tape, so I'm watching, you know, I'll end up watching 5-6 games throughout.
And most players that watch 5 or 6 games.
Most players. If they're available, I will try to do 5 or 6.
Okay.
Definitely want to watch 3 from the senior year or the final year.
Right.
Yeah.
3 from their last year that they played.
Right.
If it's up there. What do you do if they only have 1 or 2 games? Do you have any, and you don't have to share all your methods, but what happens? What do you do when it's really difficult to find more than 1 or 2 games?
Well, if you're not getting the edits for the player specific to what you're looking for, there's a couple things you can do. First of all, opponent games. So if you're looking for a defensive lineman, well, look at the offensive lineman of the opponents.
But what if you've exhausted all the opponent tape and you're still short?
You can still find so much tape, like full game clips are out there.
But you'll just have to spend the time to watch the full game.
Right. I highly recommend downloading the Huddle app. The Huddle app gives you basically a clicker in your cell phone that you can fast forward, rewind, pause, slow-mo, all of the tape. Huge advantage if you're trying to watch full games that aren't edited down. So definitely get that if you're trying to be
What if it's a small school? Is it you still can find it?
No, of course, that's way tougher to find small schools. They will occasionally have some games out there. Like I was able to find a couple of one of the guys we'll talk about today, Jordan Morgan from Kutztown. A couple games were available. Full game edits are out there. So it happens, but it's tough to find sometimes. And then as the season ends and guys have, you know, draft buzz, like agents can start signing guys and they will put out tape as well. So there's always revisit guys. If you hadn't been able to find them in midseason, try to revisit them, you know, in Senior Bowl combine time.
Okay. Yeah. And then when the All-Star games come, again, what's happening to you when the NFLPA and the Shrine and the Senior Bowl before the combine, what's changing, if anything, during that period of time?
So those are times when you can focus on groups. So you start getting a Senior Bowl Shrine game invite list, cover all of those guys. Those guys are going to be top end guys going towards the combine. Combine guys are the most important group, you know, like I don't know what the percentage is, but like I know Seattle, 8 out of 10 of their draft picks last year were at the combine. Even if they didn't compete, they were invited. That's a pretty big percentage of players that you're going to be wanting to look at as the combine.
And then when the combine comes and some guys are testing really poorly or testing really well, do you go back to the tape or does anything change from then that kind of 1 month after the combine? As we jump into the pro day.
I've already tried to cover the guys that are at the combine that I haven't watched. And then if they pop and their testing is really, really good, go back and try to find more tape, find more information. So anytime you get more information that builds a case for a guy being a potential NFL player, revisit their tape, find whatever you can, see if you were wrong. You know, that's a huge thing. Don't have too much ego about it. Try to accept that you might have missed something. You might have been right, but you just watched a bad game.
Right.
You know, so always try to cover your bases and get as much information as possible.
And how do you blind yourself to buzz or do you let that leak in a little bit but not too much? How do you control that?
Personally, I'm trying to be ahead of the buzz, and I want to have a base opinion of a guy before I start hearing the opinions of some of the bigger guys, because I don't want that seeping in, you know?
Bigger guys, you mean like a Daniel Jeremiah or Jeremiah, Mel Kiper or a Mike Mayock type or even the...
Kiper, like, okay. Let's just not do good.
Right.
But yeah, Daniel Jeremiah is really good, former scout, actually has done the job. He's very good. Mayock covers so many players. He's very knowledgeable. Don't always necessarily agree with his rankings, but tons of information there. And of course, a lot of these guys, you have to sort of decide whether you want to hear the scout rumors and the executive right. rumors and things like that. Because quite frankly, I don't know these guys. I don't know the person that I don't know the reporters, and I don't know who the reporters are talking to. I try to sort of shield out some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. That's the stuff that's the least informative to me because it can be dishonest. It can be misleading.
Propaganda.
Subterfuge. Yeah. All of that. So you never know exactly what the purpose for the executives and the personnel men giving that information out. So I try to avoid a lot of that and stick as much to the tape. But, you know, you hear names, you definitely go back and look at the tape, and then you're back to where you were, and you've got your own opinion.
And versus tape testing and buzz or you know, consensus buzz, what if you had a percentage of how you'd like to be, how would you describe that?
Oh, it's easily at least 75% tape for me. I mean, yeah, the rumors and the buzz and all of that stuff doesn't do a whole lot for me. I'm pretty, you know, secure in my own ability to watch tape right now. I've got a pretty good grasp of what I'm looking for, and I'm able to see things that are potentially promising characteristics for players to have. And then, of course, I also, while I'm doing that, I will also spend time listening to players. This guy can do a presser, you know, like that stuff sort of tells, you know, it gives you foreshadowing that this guy is actually sort of pro-ready in a lot of ways. So it gives you some of the intangible stuff.
I don't spend nearly as much time as this as you, but what I try to do is I basically have a spreadsheet, and it's kind of like a big board, and it's by position group. And what happens is when I hear names, I just write them at the bottom. I don't even place them. Mm-hmm. I just add a bunch of names. And I've done enough studies over the past 5 to 7 years of the numbers of each position group on average. Okay. And obviously every year is different because the talent pool every year is different.
Right.
But you still want to see the averages. You know, if you've studied the draft enough, that typically a much, you know, double the amount of receivers go than tight ends. And then on any NFL roster, there's probably going to be double the amount of receivers
right.
as tight ends. Okay, so do you need to study 40 tight ends? If you're an NFL team, you do, and maybe you do, but I don't feel like I need to study 40 tight ends because I'm not trying to go that down,
right.
that deep. But I know if I study 20 tight ends, I'm going to get, you know, probably most of definitely everyone in the top 4 or 5 rounds.
Right.
And then I also know, you know, with centers, it's kind of a low volume number in any year, you know. And then obviously wide receivers high. And running back can fluctuate depending on the talent level, where some years you might see only 14 or 15 guys. Other years you might see 23, 24 guys.
Right. And then, of course, there's the action-reaction. So if we saw a lot of them in 2015, 2016, then
maybe the market's full.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the earth didn't harvest as much fruit that year, and then it's saving up for the next year, you know, that you didn't have a good crop, and the next year's vintage is full. And sometimes you do see that where it's like, man, there's not a lot of these guys, and boom, then they come out, and it's like the next year it's almost 1.5 times what a normal year would be, or double.
Yeah.
You know.
And once you're 5-6 years into this, you start to see the cycles.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. So, and then what I do is I basically just try to watch 4 games of a guy. If I'm watching more than that, sometimes I question myself, like, is this guy even a good player? Because why is it taking 6 games for me to determine?
Are you trying to sell yourself on
that? Yes.
Yeah.
And just because I saw his name on a list and I've watched 4 games and I'm not that impressed, why am I watching the 5th and 6th game? Why am I watching a game from 2015?
Yeah.
You know? And it's 2017, and and those are the types of things. So I question myself because I feel like if you're a really good player, within half of a game, it's going to be pretty obvious that you're really good. And what happens is at that point, when I see a player, let's say we go into the centers and I see Pat Elflein, I'm halfway into his first game, I know he's a good player. And then I have to fight in my own mind to not just shut that down and know that that's where he is and just try to keep watching quarter by quarter, game by game, with a blank slate, and not try to say, yes, I think he's a second rounder, even though I'm at that place. We're jumping ahead here, I know, but to say, okay, but let's act like I don't know anything about him. Mm-hmm. What's this next quarter saying about him? What's the next quarter saying about him? It's really difficult. What you don't want to do is jump on Twitter after watching one game of a player. That's probably, because you get excited sometimes, or you're disgusted. Like, you're like, man, this guy's terrible. Why is it? You know what? I just want to tell the whole world, why are you hyping this guy up? And, you know, you watch one game of a guy, but it, you probably need to let a full set, maybe three games, digest before, you know, you talk about it. I'm sure I've probably been guilty of doing that, but it's something, the more you do this, that you, because again, if you catch them on the wrong game, sometimes you can overshoot or undershoot a player.
Yeah, and pigeonhole them sometimes. Yeah, I try not to get, I will definitely be victim of getting overly excited about a guy, but I try not to get on Twitter about the guys that I think were bad, because I just, it's not as enjoyable to be talking about guys. I mean, this is what they're trying to do.
You're not trying
for
to be a negative. Yeah, you're not trying to be a negative vibe.
It's my least favorite thing. I just, you know, when I do it, it's generally like, I mean, you might want to slow your roll on this guy or that guy. And I'm not trying to just crush people's dreams and things like that. And certainly, like, a lot of these players are out there on Twitter. They're finding your negative comments, and they're
young,
they're
and insecure,
them.
And they're 21 years old, and it's not easy to deal with criticism at any age. Right. But, you know, they're just kind of learning to kind of have to fight through and deal with that. What I do is I just do offense, just because with my job and kids and trying to just take care of myself just as an adult, I've found that I haven't gotten to the point where I feel like I can give enough time to both sides of the ball, even though naturally I do believe I'm a defensive mind. So when I was a little kid and played, I'm always much more of a defensive thinker. And then even when I, like, coach kids, defense is always so much easier for me. Mm-hmm. So if I'm in a game, I can always adjust on the fly on defense. But if I start off bad offensively, it's hard for me to get out of the hole. And it only takes me 10 times more to come up with an offensive game plan than it does for me for a defensive game plan. It's just totally different.
So you like to focus on your weakness.
Yeah, and maybe that's one reason why, you know, maybe I've shorted myself in life, just because, I had different mentors that, you know, they never believed in that. They always believed in building on your strengths. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think that is actually correct. But for some reason, I always like to work on my weaknesses, just because when you have a weakness, they just attack you and your weakness and you're out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So that sort of leads us to starting off today. We're going to be talking about a couple offensive line position groups, centers, guards. You want to start with centers?
Yeah, let's start with centers. And do you want to start at the top? Should we just start with the best player? I know that's
sure. I think we're a little bit different here, so that'd be a good place to start.
Okay. My number one guy is Pat Elflein out of Ohio State. I have him in the second round. I think he'll go in the early second round. I think when you watch his tape, he's the only player that I thought for the center that this guy was really fun to watch. I felt he finished blocks. I felt he was really good in the run game. I think he was solid enough in the pass game. You know, in Ohio State, they run the ball. I mean, they don't run the ball as powerfully as they did when they had Ezekiel Elliott.
Right.
But I still think they run about the same offense. And I do think, you know, if there was one guy that, hey, this guy could be a Pro Bowl type center, and I think in the NFL he is a center, even though I know he did play guard previously, but he doesn't have big size. And we're going to find out exactly arm length and all that probably in the next couple of weeks.
One of a handful.
I think he's a center in the NFL.
One of a handful of guys that we'll be talking about today that we don't have official weigh-in yet. A lot of the guys were weighed in at Shrine and Senior Bowl, so we can sort of speak a little bit towards their official size, arm length, hand size. But at Elflein, we don't. It's speculatively so far 6'3", 300 pounds. That's from Ohio State. I kind of disagreed a little bit with – I prefer him – in pass protection.
Okay.
I sort of thought that in the run game he was a little bit sketchy getting to the second level. So that second block, second level, he was sort of whiffing on a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And Michigan game specifically, like just lunging and forward lean, and so I was a little disappointed by that, but I thought his like best pass protector center this class easily for me.
And I'm a pretty easy grader on second level whiffs, which, because, you know, when you watch, it could be the Seahawks, it could be just a lot of O-line tape. You're seeing, you're going to see second level. You're going to see a lot of misses. You're going to see a lot of guys that aren't, that are okay athletes, and some guys that are very unathletic.
Yeah.
And when they get to the second level, they're dealing with a safety or a linebacker or a cornerback or whoever who's going to be a superior athlete, who's going to be quicker. Mm-hmm. If they get their hands on them, they're probably going to win because they're, you know, 100 pounds bigger or 50 pounds bigger. But a lot of times, you know, they're kind of in a tough situation, you know, unless it's a middle linebacker in the hole and it's a run, you know, and they can really square them up. So a lot of times for me, I'm not super harsh on
right,
the second level grading, and that would even go with when I watch the Seahawks. It's like, for me, it's like, hey, that's really cool if you could put a really clean second level block on a guy.
Yeah.
But if you're not as sticky as I want you to be, but that initial block on the first level is where I'm like, when I see failure there, that's where I'm like, no, this is kind of like, you know, I don't like that.
Right. And then so there's sort of two mindsets that I look at a player. A, for the Seahawks, I mean, I write about that, and it's sort of my priority. And then sort of in the back of my mind, what does the league think about this? How does he fit in the league? And I think that your assessment is what most NFL GMs are going to see and are going to think about. I happen to think, you know, if the Seahawks want to be a run-dominant team again, they weren't really this year, I think that there's one guy that I like a little bit better for the Seahawks scheme.
Okay. Yeah. And who's that?
That's the one we're going to talk about next. Ethan Pocic, LSU, center slash tackle slash guard.
So do you think Elflein for the league will go ahead, or do you think that Pocic could actually go ahead?
I think Elflein goes first.
Okay.
I do, yeah. He's pretty traditional center, doesn't have a lot of glaring flaws, and he's pretty...
What's your guess on his spot?
I'd say 35-ish, yeah.
So high second round.
Yeah, okay. Definitely. I think
he's in the high second round as well.
I don't think the league is super anxious to draft centers early this year. We don't have a Ryan Kelly this year that looks like...
Ryan Kelly was bigger.
Yeah.
And he was...
cleaner.
Yeah, cleaner, more dominant. But I think Elflein, to me, is the best center, but I don't think he's going to go in the first round. I do think he's going to go in the second round, and I could see it in the first half of the second round.
And it's also partially the rest of the draft class, where there's other positions that are so good that I don't think teams are going to be like missing out on those cornerbacks, those edge rushers, mm-hmm. in order to draft a center that...
Even if he's center one or center two,
yeah,
depending on how we look at it.
Exactly. So Ethan Pocic from LSU, officially at the Senior Bowl, 6'6", 307 pounds. Short arms, but we have found through the years that the Senior Bowl is kind of stingy on their arm measurements. So 32 5/8 inch arms is not ideal to play a position other than interior O-line. Don't generally see an outside guy with arms that short, but they may be adjusted once he gets to the combine. In fact, that's been a pattern recently, actually. He's got some experience at left tackle. He's got a game or two at right tackle this year. I like this guy as a run blocker. Like, this guy, he's got enough nastiness. It's not like penalty drawing nastiness. Plays to the whistle, and I like his temperament. I like his versatility.
Do you think he's a guard, tackle, or center in the NFL?
I really wanted to project him as a tackle until I saw the arm measurement. I don't think most GMs want to put 32 5/8 inch arms outside. I mean, on tape, he can play it, but so can, you know, some of these other short arm guys, you know, Forrest Lamp that we'll talk about in a sec. So at the moment, I think it's probably going to end up at guard. So I know we've got him here in the center section, but I think that whoever drafts him probably puts him at guard.
And you think he goes in the mid to late second round?
Yes. Yeah. So I think that, so if Pocic is, or if Elflein is 35, I think Pocic is probably 40, 42.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had him kind of in the late second round. I felt that some of his tape, to me, there was some forward lean, some falling off, a little bit of sloppiness at times, but at the same time, I do think he's better in the run game. And then a really good game is the 2015 game where he played, and Leonard Fournette looked really impressive in that game. And they played – Keanu Neal played for Florida, I believe.
Okay.
Right? They played Florida.
Okay.
And, man, he had a really, very good run game. Reach uh-huh. blocking, lateral movement was really good. It almost felt it was better than some of his 2016 tape. And I also wonder if – He seemed like a really hyped up name for a year that this guy was going to be really high. And I wonder if his stock fell a little bit over this last season, because he has been playing, you know, he's like a 3 or 4 year starter, I believe.
Right.
So he's not a new guy to these NFL teams.
Right. Yeah.
You think he's fallen maybe a little bit this year?
I do, but I think that's sort of the center position fell. So, yeah. And then other positions have risen. So I'm not going to read too much into that. Yeah, he does have a little bit of trouble with anchor. So if you get a big, you know, he had some trouble with Chris Jones in 2015. But Chris Jones is a very good player.
And you like him better in run block versus pass protection?
Right, yeah.
And so, they run a lot at LSU, right? Correct. I mean, so that's another thing is when you're watching these offenses, they don't throw very much.
Interesting note. So the first three guys that I think we're going to talk about at center, all in zone schemes in college.
So the third guy, I go Elflein,
Pochich.
Sorry, Ethan, if we're butchering your name. Third guy for me, I believe, is the same as you. It's Tyler Orlowski out of West Virginia. I am not in love with this guy, but I kind of think he goes in the third round. Mm. And so I'd put him as the third center. He's not huge. He's sub 300 pounds. He's 6'3".
Yeah.
He's solid in the pass pro game. His run, his run blocking to me isn't like exciting and fun and super duper impressive.
Yeah.
But I still feel like this guy will be an NFL starter. I think there's a market for him somewhere in the third round, and he's played a long time. And I think for the most part, he kind of does everything right.
Yeah, very solid player. Doesn't excite you very much in the run game. He's not a great mover, not a great athlete. But I think he can keep your quarterback upright. And I think he is sort of unanimous third center off the board for most people. I'm sort of recently sliding the center from Clemson, Jay Guillermo, up ahead of Orlowski. And mostly I think he's a little bit better in the run game than Orlowski. There's some stuff that he did, I think it might have been the national championship game, just getting out on the move that I was a little bit surprised by, because I had sort of had him pegged as not much of a mover. And then he put on some tape that he can move a little bit. So
when I watched Guillermo, I think I started with those playoff games and I was super impressed. But then when I watched more of the regular season, that's where, to me, because everyone has him more like as a fifth rounder, probably.
And not invited to the combine.
Not a great sign. And he's not exactly gigantic.
No.
He's not a big guy. And so I felt in the playoff games, he played better than he did during the regular season. And I wonder if that factored into why he wasn't invited to the combine, why there's not a lot of buzz on this guy.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure why there's no buzz and why not the combine. I think he's one of the bigger combine snubs, actually. But I think that he's going to be a nice value for somebody, even if he goes undrafted. This guy might end up starting and being a really good player in the league.
Yeah, so that Jay Guillermo is definitely one to watch. I kind of think he's going to end up going more in like the fifth round, but he could be a great value, or if he goes a little earlier than that. And again, this guy wasn't even invited to the combine. It's just someone to keep a mental note about.
Mm-hmm.
Played really well. They played Ohio State. I thought he played really well. I think he played pretty well against Alabama.
Played well against Auburn.
Yeah, I didn't watch. Okay, I did watch that game. And then I watched a couple other regular season games, and there was a couple games there where I wasn't as much in love with him, kind of falling off blocks on the ground a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
John Toth out of Kentucky.
That's a guy that I thought was on the ground a lot, actually.
Yes. The best game he played, I felt, was Alabama. And so if you watch that game first, I almost feel like, oh, maybe this guy would be, you know, a third or fourth rounder.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I watched him after that, and this guy's really smart, I guess. He's like an engineer and super, super intelligent. And he's tall. He's 6'5". You know, I think he's over 300 pounds. But I'm kind of thinking he's more of a fourth rounder as I kind of watch more and more games of him. He does fall off blocks. He's not particularly extremely athletic.
Right.
And he doesn't stick as much as I'd like for a player. What do you think of John Toth?
Yeah, I thought he was really inconsistent. I don't know if I watched the exact same games that you did, but I had games where I thought, this guy is kind of a cool little player, but then I'd watch the next game and I'd be like, what was I thinking? So really inconsistent, and as you've said recently, if you're inconsistent, you're not good.
Kyle Fuller out of Baylor. There was reports that he really struggled in this last Shrine Week. And a lot of the tape I found, it was hard for me to find tape, but I was able to find it by kind of studying wide receivers and quarterbacks from Baylor.
Uh-huh.
So I was able to get, and then I watched a bunch of 2015 tape on him. I think he could be a valuable backup, and he can play guard probably. He's probably big enough to play guard.
6'5", 306 with 34-inch arms. So
and
he's
big,
got plenty of length.
Big bubble down low, so he's got a little bit of a power source. Not extremely athletic, doesn't move extremely well. didn't sound like he had a really good time at the Shrine game or at the Senior Bowl. He didn't have a very good week. Not that I would make that the official evaluation of him. I do think there's an NFL market for him, but I kind of think it's probably more in the fifth round.
Fifth round and probably backup. I sort of agree with that. I didn't see any particular standout characteristics with him. I was just like, he seemed a little...
He has size and length, but yeah. Besides that, there was nothing about him that was super special.
Nothing really super special. And so for that reason, that's why one of the reasons why a guy for me like Guillermo is ahead of Toth and Fuller.
And Chase Roullier, were you ever able to watch him? He played guard, and then last year he played center at Wyoming. He's a bigger guy. He's 320 pounds. You can kind of tell he looks like he's 320 pounds when you watch the tape of him.
He's got a bubble and some hips.
He's got a bubble and hips. He definitely is got a lot.
He looks like a center.
Yeah, I think he could actually play guard in the NFL as well.
I watched him a year or two ago as a guard, and I liked him as a guard. And then this year I sort of was – behind things, and he had been moved to center, and I had to struggle to find tape of him at center, so I don't have a great feel for him as a center, but then I revisited some of the tape at guard, and I don't remember exactly why I was as high as I was early on.
So to watch tape of him, just watch a lot of they have a running back, I think his name's Brian Hill.
Yeah,
and so if you just watch a lot, and they will keep the pass pro plays of Brian Hill a lot in the clips,
right?
And so I was able to watch, I think, three, four, five games of him this year even.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was like I'd heard maybe this guy can go to the fourth round, but I kind of think he's probably a fifth rounder. Again, I think he could probably play guard as well, and so there might be some value for him being able – because, like, let's say we have a Joey Hunt sixth round. Yeah. He can only play one position as a backup.
So you bump up Roullier for –
Yeah, because
guard.
He's a bigger guy. He could definitely back up at guard,
yeah.
And he might not start initially. But this guy, and I would kind of say the same thing about Kyle Fuller, is they're bigger guys. They could probably play guard as a backup. So I think both of them could be somewhere in the fifth round based on that, even though you're not necessarily in love necessarily with their tape. He graded really well Pro Football Focus, which is more about, like, did they do their assignment and that type of thing. But to be honest, when I watch a player – I'm not just watching their assignment. I'm looking at how he moves, and I'm putting a lot of subjective judgments, which are not necessarily quantifiable mathematically of do I think he's moving well or not. And it's just a feeling that I have when I watch him.
I don't know for sure how Pro Football Focus does it, but it sometimes feels like they're looking at what he's doing and not how he's doing. And so I sort of have to also take into mind how he's doing. Is he moving athletically? Is he, you know, is he clean? Like, things like that, which I don't know that Pro Football Focus
cares. Because
Pro Football,
when a guy's lumbering, they're not going to say, this guy's lumbering. They're saying, did he make the block or not? Did he sustain his block for 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, or whatever it might be? I'm not necessarily doing that. Yeah. I'm more like, how's, you know, the number one thing when I watch a player is, how does he move?
Yeah.
Is he able to express, is he able to do with his body what he wants to do in his mind?
Right.
So does that mean anchor down in this play? Does that mean reach?
Right.
Does that mean run down the field and block a cornerback on a toss play, and I'm pulling like a long pull on the outside?
Yeah.
And for a 300-pound man, their mind wants to do that.
Yeah.
But not all, very few 300-pound guys can
physically do
it. And then connect on that chop block or that cut block that's, you know, on the sideline. You're cutting an extreme athlete, a cornerback or a safety, a superior athlete. That'd be better than any athlete that we would encounter on a daily basis. This person would be a better athlete than probably anyone you would meet on a daily basis.
Right.
And at that age, and can they, you know, do their assignment?
And then at the same time, is a guy look like he's physically capable of doing that, but he knows what he's supposed to be doing? So that's the other thing you have to sort of simultaneously be looking for is can they, do they know what they're doing, and can they execute it?
Any other centers that I failed to mention?
Not really. I sort of stopped after five or six because they just sort of tailed off and really didn't start. It was not,
I watched J.J. Dealman. I kind of thought sixth, seventh round. I watched
from Utah.
I watched Cameron Tom.
Southern Miss?
Yes, Southern Miss. Not impressed with him.
Yeah.
He played in that game against the Huskies.
Okay.
Two bowl games ago.
Right.
You know, I think there will be a market for him, but it'll probably be seventh round, sixth round, undrafted, you know, type thing.
Basically, for me.
And then a lot of the guys beyond that were really undersized for the NFL, where they were getting by, you know, in college, and there's, you know, there's four or five other names that if you look,
yeah,
but I, none of them, one game in, I'm looking at this guy's not big enough.
Yeah.
He's not athletic enough. I'm not going to hunt for four games with this guy when everything I know is telling me this guy's going to be sixth, seventh, you know, round or undrafted.
Right. And the other thing, especially about center and a little bit for the guards, is that you're going to be finding the numbers for those guys from college guards and college tackles. So you're going to be pulling some of those guys, like the Cody Whitehairs, like potentially Forrest Lamp. Some of those guys that played a tackle or a guard in college are going to be switched over to center in the pros.
So you don't need to study 20 centers in college,
yeah,
really, in a
I
given
mean,
year. It's not going to bear the fruit of,
yeah,
of finding,
totally,
because you're going to have the superior athletes are going to be playing guard or tackle.
Right.
Some of them are going to get pulled in.
Yeah,
either due to length or athleticism or whatever, that they're not going to be a dominant tackle or guard in the NFL.
Yeah,
either probably because of the size or athleticism,
mm-hmm,
but they have the smarts to play center, so they'll bring them in.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like you look at Justin Britt, he's a good center, I think, now.
Mm-hmm.
When I watch him, I think he's better than most of these guys, except for maybe Elfline and maybe, you know, he right now, I would say, I would take Justin Britt right now over almost all these guys,
mm-hmm,
to play center next year, except maybe Elfline.
Mm-hmm.
And so... But as a guard, he wasn't that good. As a tackle, he wasn't that good. And because now he's the bigger man, but he's not dealing with the freaks. The
yeah,
nose, because either he's getting help,
yeah,
or it's more of a nose tackle. So the nose tackle is playing a power game.
Mm-hmm. So he's not going to get beat by speed.
He's not going to get beat by speed. But what happens when he plays guard and he's playing against those elite defensive interior guys,
right,
they have the power and the speed. It's a very tough combo,
yeah,
to deal with. And then for Britt, when he played tackle, he couldn't handle some of the speed, just, you know, Von Miller. I mean, it's hard for anyone to deal with a Von Miller on the outside. But at center, he's a big man. He's a big center.
Mm.
He has help. And then it's
and a lot of times he is the help. So
he's
chipping somebody else.
And when the guy that's coming at him, if he's singled up, it's typically a power player, not a speed player. And so I think center is a really important position, but athletically, on a snap-to-snap basis, I think it is an easier job than guard, definitely in pass pro. Just to kind of review, so if we were to make a list, how would you just – we have ranked them, but just do it one more time. You rank them, then I will go through and kind of give my ranks as well.
So, I mean, I put Pocic a little bit ahead.
Okay.
I like his versatility, so, I mean, that's part of why I'm thinking that.
So he's
like,
one for you. Okay.
Yeah, I like his run block. And then Elfline's two. Both of those guys, second round. The third, for me, I like Guillermo. I think he's comparable to Orlovsky. So I sort of don't understand the disparity between. So, like, for example, Draft Scout puts Orlovsky at 83, Guillermo's at 283 overall ranking. That they're way closer than that to me. Nobody else has given me good reason to sort of separate those two. They're actually very similarly built too. Both 31 and 6/8 inch arms.
I have Elfline number one, upper second round, Pocic two, bottom of the second round, Orlovsky three, third round, Toth fourth round. In the fifth round, I would put Kyle Fuller, Chase Roullier, and Guillermo would be somewhere in the fifth round. I do like Guillermo, actually, of that group, but I kind of think they're going to go in that cluster. And
yeah,
and until the combine, I'm not sure if I want to necessarily stack those guys. Again, for Fuller and Roullier, I think, and Pocic, they have value as guards, and so I think that's going to help their value with their versatility. I don't think Guillermo can play anything but center, and so that's another reason why I kind of think he is more going to go in the fifth round.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely see the appeal, and I definitely do think he had a good end of season finish.
Mm.
And obviously you saw they won the national championship
there
game.
You
and you know, and he was obviously a big piece of that.
And the last center to do that, Ryan Kelly.
All right. So we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about guards.